Hey guys, it's Ellie with Atomic Moms. I'm recording this little intro in the bathroom while my daughter is in her playroom calling for me. This episode's awesome. It's with Mark Weber. He is an incredible filmmaker. I kind of geek out like Chris Farley on SNL. I keep saying like, remember when? Yeah, that was awesome. You know, like how Chris Farley did it. Anyway, you're going to want to subscribe on iTunes because they now only show our most 20 recent podcasts. And you're going to want to subscribe so that you can scroll down all of our podcasts and find our episode with Teresa Palmer, who's Mark Weber's wife. So that's your homework, everybody. Enjoy this episode. We love doing it. Shout out to Bianca, who's on a flight right now to Montreal for work. And stick around.
Hey.
Hello.
Guys, we're in the studio and we're about to play for you an interview that we did this past week with an incredible human being. He is an actor, producer, director.
Daddy of two.
Husband. His name is Mark Weber. He comes via Ellie, via Teresa Palmer.
And when we did our interview with Teresa, he came with the kids.
Yeah.
And he held down the fort for like the hour that we were chatting with her, and which I think is pretty special because he's such a badass, like to take on a 7-year-old and an infant at the same time in this weird recording studio that was not kid friendly at all. And he just like, yeah,
he's awesome. Can I make a confession right
yes.
now? I almost said this in the interview with him, but I didn't want to make him feel uncomfortable because you never know with people. But when my first marriage ended, I was scouting out my next, like, who, like, because, you know, when something ends and you're really depressed and I felt like my whole world, literally the rug had just been pulled out from underneath me. My world came down around my shoulders. I'm being very dramatic about it right now. But I was scoping out trying to cheer myself up and be like, who's out there still? Who could be a good candidate for me as a partner? And I remember it was around the time, I think, The End of Love, which is the movie that he wrote, produced, directed, and acted in with his son, came out. And I think I saw something of him at Sundance and I was like, oh, that guy seems awesome.
Yeah, he's very soulful.
Very soulful.
And I feel really relieved that you said that because when he did the interview with us, which you all will be listening to shortly, I kind of went to Cougar Town on him. And I have to admit that I have spent the past week kind of spiraling about why did I say how cute he was? I love Teresa.
Because he is.
I know.
He is. And he's very artistic and he's very charismatic.
And he has all these tattoos and he's like such a bad boy. See, there I go again.
See, you have to live in my world, which is my husband drools nightly over porn stars and models, and his entire Instagram account is naked women, and, you know, this is life.
I love it. They're not cougars. They're just men.
And, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But we are very excited to bring you a papa and a great papa, a papa who's getting out there in the world and leaving his mark and making beautiful art and also just really a dad with integrity. And
and I can't wait for everyone to hear what his backstory was.
Yeah.
And also his relationship with his mother and the things she's been up to. You guys, I was blown away.
Yes, it's good. I'm excited for you to hear that. What's going on with you?
We are potty training.
Oh my gosh.
We got a potty in the mail probably a month ago and she was super into it. And then we sort of didn't really, you know, push it or go for it. So then she lost interest in it. But now she's like super gung-ho about it. And it's been really, really great. And I know it's supposed to be a lot easier for girls and boys. She has been so awesome.
So what does that process look like? Because I haven't even...
Well, I did not read any of the books.
Yeah.
But our process has just been...
I'm so proud of you, by the way. Flying by the seat of your pants.
Very intuitive.
Pun intended.
She she at first, you know, like when she first wakes up, we'll put her on the potty, basically figuring out what her rhythms are, like when she pees usually. And then if she hasn't gone in a while, we'll try again. And my husband started by showing her, well, you know, screen time, right? So, so she would sit on the potty and he'd show her little videos of the two of them. So she loved that.
Yeah.
And then if she peed, we'd get really excited and I'd give her a Frozen sticker. And then she'll just go poopy, poopy, no matter what it is. And she's been really, really consistent with it. But at night, right before we go to bed, I mean, she really drags it out. It's like, we'll go to the restroom. I'll sit on the tile floor for 30 minutes. We'll do the itsy bitsy spider because I'm trying to keep her on the toilet. And then she'll stand up and want to play around. And then I'll say, okay, time to go to our room. And then she'll be like, no, poopy, poopy. So then she sits back down. I mean, this is way oversharing, but she milks it because then I'll pick her up to put her to bed in the crib and then she'll go poopy and you don't want to. So then I'm like,
is she just saying it?
Yeah. She's just saying it. Cause she knows it's like a free ticket to like another 20 minutes.
Oh, that's,
so that's been kind of tricky.
How do you even know when it's time to start? Like what, is there something that they say that's like a good indicator of when your kid's ready to start trying to potty train?
I have no idea. I saw a potty at a friend's house. Their son was the same age. And I was like, oh, I wonder if we should get her one. And so we just did. And she, the first month that we weren't hardcore about it at all. And now she still uses diapers, sometimes pull-ups. But she's been so good about like knowing when the sensation is there and going to the restroom. And then like when she goes number two, it's like, you know, it's like I just got a raise or something. I get so excited.
It's so funny. Have you seen those when I was up in Seattle visiting an old friend of mine and her daughter, they had this little toilet that's just the seat and then it's just open in the bottom so you can take it with you like to the park.
And then you just poop on the floor.
Put it on the ground and
that
they
seems
like
so unsanitary.
I know.
Or are you supposed to put it on an adult toilet?
No, it's literally like a take along toilet. Like it's meant for if you're
somewhere. Hear what I'm saying, because that's a good idea. Like do a small toilet
on top
that
of
could
the
go on a real toilet.
Oh, absolutely. But this
one, this is literally just a
this is one. I guess it's for like if you're potty training and you're somewhere like at a park or where it wouldn't be that terrible for your kid to go outside. I don't know. I did think it was kind of like it seemed weird to me.
We'll look into that one.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of parks, I was at the park yesterday with Magnolia and with our neighbor and her little girl, who is about 18 days older than Magnolia. And it's so fun. Like it's so fun now because they're starting to. Like, it seems like they have little friendships. Like, she gets really excited when she sees Carly coming over, and we'll go meet at the park. They live literally around the corner from us. So we were at the park, and Carly was playing with, like, this little wheel thing, and this boy who's probably about 4 or 5 came over and kind of, like, started to spin the wheel away from her, and she got really upset. And something in him shifted immediately, and it was really odd because he got visibly stressed out by the fact that she was crying. And then he started to try and put his hand over her mouth, which was really weird because there was like an intensity to it. And my neighbor was so awesome because she just handled it so well. She said, no, let her cry. It's okay. You didn't do anything wrong. She needs to be okay to just cry this one out. Well, he wasn't having it. And he was so intense and so hell bent on putting his hand over her mouth that it started to get really uncomfortable. And I had such an insane experience myself with it because I started to get very angry. And I got obviously protective because we were sitting right there too. But I found myself getting angry at him like I would if it were an adult doing it. Like, you do not act this way towards our little ones. And I said, please stop. Please don't put your hand over her mouth. And then Denise was so great and she grabbed him and kind of just removed him from the situation. She just gently pushed, took him, picked him up and put him to the side. And I saw her just talk to him for a second. And
is his parents?
Well, nobody was around. We looked around and there wasn't anybody there. And then he started crying. Aww. And then a mom came over and she said, you know, oh, did he hurt her? And my neighbor was like, no, he didn't, but he really was not okay with her crying. And the woman said, oh, yeah, since he was a baby, he doesn't like – he gets stressed out when babies cry. He doesn't like it when babies cry. And so he's like, shh.
Yeah. I've been there.
Trying to shut her up. And afterwards, I was thinking about it. I felt so bad for him because he was clearly heartbroken.
And he was probably so shaken when a woman – from his point of view, a woman, just a stranger, picks him up.
Yeah. I mean, she was just trying to move him out of the situation.
From his perspective, yeah. That would be like freaky to have a stranger touch you.
Well, and then it was afterwards, I felt so bad because I was trying to analyze my reaction to it and that I got so angry. I mean,
I have an idea.
What?
Well, you tell me yours first.
No.
Am I going to play shrink now?
This is great. I like it.
I'm curious what triggered. Did someone in your life or did a man ever want to put his hand on your mouth and shut you up or not let you have your feelings?
No, it wasn't about that. It's funny. It's happened a couple times now in the last week because I've been taking Magnolia to a lot of fun places around our house, like playgrounds and then all these like little cafes where they have play places. And everywhere we go, inevitably, there's one child who's too rough. And at one place we were at last week, this little girl who was – and they're always older. They're always kind of in that 3 to 4 range. For no reason came up behind Magnolia and just shoved her from behind with both her hands. And I've noticed that there's something in me that's not saying like, oh, they're kids. They don't really understand what they're doing. Maybe it's misplaced anger like at the parents. And I'm getting – but I said it to Mike too because Mike was talking about how there was a little boy who got Magnolia. There was a ball and a small ball at the park and she was like – and she says bubbles a lot. And she's like, bubble. And he said this kid came up to her and goes, no, it's a ball. And Mike said he got so like – it's like she doesn't know what she's saying. He's like I started to get frustrated with the kid and it's so funny. It's just I don't know. I was trying to just kind of see where that comes from. Where does that annoyance or that frustration – for me, it was a little bit of that anger coming up at this child who clearly doesn't know any better. And I think that part of it may be that in all of these instances, there hasn't been a parent around. So maybe it's misplaced
But it's so funny because we did a whole podcast where you are so gung-ho about free-range parenting. And now you're pissed off that the parents aren't around.
Well, but I think yes, you're right. But I think that the reason I'm saying that is if you have a kid – because every time when the parent finally shows up, they've said – like the girl at the play place who pushed Magnolia, her mom finally came over and said, oh, yeah, we had to stop going to this other play group because she learned that and now that's all she does. Yeah. So what we talked about in the Free Range podcast was about knowing your child and that it's important to know your child. And I think that if you know, which clearly all of these parents, that your kid tends to do this kind of thing, then it's on you to be around to watch if they do that. Right. Because – someone else shouldn't be parenting your child.
That's true. Well, definitely no one else should be parenting – or my perspective is no one else should be parenting your child. But also maybe those parents have been told just play the other side for a second is like maybe they've been told don't micromanage your kid every second or like you know, obviously don't hurt a child. But there's also – I mean there's a lot of times where parents want to have their child – do conflict resolution on their own. I mean, right parenting is a lot about that. Like the parents don't just jump in and try and fix everything all the time.
Right.
If the kids are fighting over a toy, let them kind of duke it out as long as it's safe. And that's maybe the other side of it.
Listen, I don't jump in right away, but if it starts to get a point where I feel like the little girl pushing Magnolia
you want to step
in where it gets a little nutty. I mean, I think it'd be really interesting to hear from the listeners, you guys, if you have a story of maybe something that happened when you were at a playground or playgroup or whatever and how you dealt with it. I'm very curious to hear how other people deal with aggression in other kids because
it's so interesting because for me too, I feel like Sabrina's so strong that I'm not worried about it or like that's not – she gets pushed down all the time at her My Gym class.
Yeah.
And boys will – crawl over her or they'll try and take away her toys and I just let her do her thing and she's able to
But I'm not talking about those kids, because definitely there's kids that are just having fun and they don't notice it. I'm not talking about those kids. I'm talking about that on four different occasions now at four different places, there has been a child that seems to be almost obsessive with their aggression, where it's there's something in there's an intensity about it that feels unsafe. And with all of the kids that had this, the parents knew about it and right. and stated, I know she does this thing. So that's what I'm wondering about.
What do you want them from them, though? Like, what do you want from that parent? To not let them go?
They can go, but then be there. You don't have to be on top of them holding their hand, but at least be within. None of these parents have been in the vicinity to even see what's happening. So if you know your child has an aggressive issue, obviously I'm not saying don't take them to these places, but then be there. Be at least within eyes, you know, where you can see your child. This woman at the park was not even in – we couldn't see her. Couldn't even see her. She had no idea what her kid was doing. So, yes, I think it's important to let your kids play and whatnot, but, like, we also have to be held responsible if your kid has some weird thing where they, like, are trying to hurt another child. Like, there was this other girl at this other place. I don't know how to explain it other than to say, like, she wanted to grab Magnolia, and you could see she was clenching her jaw, that she wanted to grab her as hard as she could and squeeze – like, she had her hand around her arm. It was really kind of scary. Like, it's not your child, so you don't know how to talk to them.
Of course,
you know, I don't know what the issue is. I don't know what you're. So I guess for me,
we should have a specialist on too about like
I would love that
how we can. What's the best way to sort of like
diffuse?
Diffuse the situation and keep your kids safe, but like respect the other kids' boundaries and like whatever the other kids' parents have going on.
I think what happens is I'm acting out of. I think the anger is from fear because I don't. Understand
it's your mama
it.
Bear.
Yeah. And I, yeah. I mean, I've been very territorial like that. Like, I love calling parking enforcement on cars that are parked illegally around our house because it makes
Bianca.
It makes me so angry. It's like, how could you be so callous and block our driveway? Yeah. This is a whole nother story. Anyway, I think we should probably zen out a little bit before our guest, before our guest interview.
We'll be right back. Oh boy. Oh boy. Just got a little hotter in here.
And uncomfortable, Ellie. Thank you.
I am a cougar in training. I can't help it. Thank you for coming, Mark Weber. It's an honor to have you as our guest.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. And we're so excited because Mark is not only a great dad, which we've witnessed in I saw for one little minute, but I could tell he had the whole crew under his wings while Teresa was doing our podcast, but also an acclaimed filmmaker and everything. You wear so many hats and you do it all.
Actor, director, producer,
writer. You guys
are making
me feel really good about myself right now. Thank you.
It's always good to have on the podcast people who are getting out there and doing it, because I think like such a big thing about parenthood is you feel so overwhelmed and it's mm-hmm. hard to even imagine getting yourself out of bed every day. So mm-hmm. to go forward and actually then produce works of art and do creative things. And I mean, it's very inspiring, I think, for people to hear how you do that. So can we just start off by talking about being a parent and working and how that's been for you and traveling and all of the amazing things that you do?
And how old is Isaac?
Yes.
Isaac just turned 7.
Okay. 7. And Bodie?
16 months.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. A little bit of an age gap there. It's been great. I mean, with Isaac, in terms of working and being a dad at the same time, I just wrote him into a movie that I made. So
yes, and that movie was called
The End of Love. Yeah, and that was really cool. I mean, at that time I was looking to make my next film, and Isaac was born, and then I had that idea of like, wow, I've never really seen a movie about a single dad in an authentic way before. And so that was cool. It was convenient for me to basically fold my kid into my work.
I know, but it wasn't. Come on, be honest. Mm-hmm. How convenient is it to film with a toddler? Let's be clear. First of all, for our listeners, you can find this film, The End of Love, on iTunes and also on Amazon. So you can watch it tonight. But how old was Isaac when you shot the film?
He just turned 2.
Okay. So you have a 2-year-old, and this whole movie is like you guys. Mm-hmm. And I'd say it's a buddy dramedy, mm-hmm. if you
totally.
Will.
Totally. Yeah.
And it's for parents out there, which, and only parents listen to us, so I don't know why I'm saying that. For parents out there, you're right. Oh, thank you. We have sitters. We have a lot of people.
Well, we have a lot of people who write us who say that they haven't had a kid yet, but they're like learning.
Yeah, and some that don't even want kids, and they still listen to us, which is like the biggest, highest, really cool. highest compliment.
That awesome.
Okay, so I'm sitting there watching the film, and I've never seen such a realistic depiction mm-hmm. of a father and child interacting mm-hmm. and it was so realistic, it almost felt voyeuristic.
Cool. Yeah,
you have to talk to us about how convenient and also inconvenient it would be to shoot with a toddler.
But first of all, I want to know, how did you know he was going to be a good actor?
Because I didn't. I mean, that was the thing about the whole thing. It was so exhilarating and crazy because it was just this huge experiment for me. And so much was on the line for me as a filmmaker and as a dad, too. And it was really just an extraordinary process. I really found my voice as a filmmaker on that movie and how I like to work as an artist. It was really hard. It was really, really hard. But the hard stuff is the good stuff. And so I'm happy that we went through this thing together, and now I have this beautiful time capsule to share with him eventually at some point.
There's one scene in the bathroom, and I remember looking, it's so beautifully shot too, that I was like, oh my God, I would just want to take stills from this and like plaster it all over my house, like if you were like in my family, because it's such a it will be an amazing time capsule.
Yeah, it is. It's really cool. It's really cool to have that and as a gift for him, you know, when
he's a bit older. Can you give us a little like log line of what the film is about?
It's about a single dad struggling to raise his toddler after a sudden loss in his life. So it's about a man who's grieving but really can't, you know, and death and life and death and parenting. So those are the themes of the film.
It's so ambitious to imagine writing and directing and producing this. And then also you're concerned about your child, or like, you know, mm-hmm. playing off of him. And when I read something about like when he would sleep, you'd be like, okay, everyone go home. Mm-hmm. It's nap time. Mm-hmm. And then they'd come back 2 hours later. Mm-hmm. And that there wasn't any sort of manipulation with him. You were just sort of play off of him.
Yeah, he was in charge.
And so you've got that going. And then also that you're playing a character who's in deep mourning.
Yeah. That was the thing that I didn't really anticipate being as hard as it was initially. I was more concerned about, okay, we have to shoot on really small cameras. We can't have a crew. Isaac just has to think that we're making videos like that we would make on my phone. And I didn't really consider the impact of just the subtlest of shifts in my mood around him, which once I started to realize, oh, he's realizing that dad's kind of a little out of it. Just because in normal life, I'm so engaged and so present with him and we're having fun. So I had to really overcompensate for the work. And we worked in really short bursts. So basically, I mean, some of our days were a half hour and that was it. And everyone, you know, everyone would go home.
We were done. My God, that sounds like a dream job.
It was, it was for the, you know.
How long did it take to shoot the entire thing?
It was a couple months.
Yeah.
We started just before the holidays, you know, a few years back. So like, you know, we shot for a little bit, then we took a little bit of a break, and then we shot some more.
There's one scene near the end where you guys kind of go camping mm-hmm. for a moment. Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering what your inspiration for that moment was. It felt very spiritual.
Yeah. I think for me too, it was a bit having to do with my childhood. You know, I had to live out on the streets with my mom. It was a way of kind of recreating just the extreme situation for this guy, in his kid, and also just was the ideal way of depicting complete hopelessness and just not knowing what to do. And how when you're in pain and you're suffering, you can make some irrational choices. And just playing on the duality of how a parent and someone can be one place and things are actually really awful, but your child, you can manipulate the situation where they're okay, you mm-hmm. know? They don't know that you're miserable. Yeah. Or at least you hope they're not picking up on it as right. much as it's really, it is in reality.
And I don't want to give it away, obviously, for people that are going to watch the film, but I thought it was so beautiful because, yeah, it's like an erratic moment. The father seems to be acting out of anger and desperation, sort of, and not mm-hmm. knowing what to do. And so they get in the car and then they go up and they're up at Griffith Park, right?
Yeah.
And
Actually, we shot in Beechwood.
Okay, Beechwood. Okay, yeah. So like this is all like 5 minutes. We all live in the same neighborhood.
Yeah.
And I thought that was such a beautiful choice too, because it felt like it was, you were getting back to nature though. It wasn't a destructive choice of like, oh, we're going to go. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, he'll go to some other friend's house and there'll be something horrible going on. It wasn't that. It was like, I'm getting myself out of the situation. We need to get back in touch with nature, mm-hmm. look up at the stars. And then my favorite moment is when he's like, okay, let's go home. Yeah. Like, and that felt like such a perfect, like, God, as a parent, there's so many times when I'm like, oh, well, maybe this will be the big thing. Mm-hmm. And then you're just like, ah, oh, crap. Okay, it's not. But that's okay. We tried it. It didn't work out.
Totally.
But it was, God, it was so, it's a very meaningful film and everyone should watch it.
Thank you.
Has Isaac seen the movie? No,
not
he hasn't yet.
No.
Do you have like an idea of when you think it would be okay for him to watch? Or
I think as early as next year. That's on the early end of it. I had 10 in my head for some reason.
Yeah.
But he's getting there. He's getting really close.
But does he remember it? Does he know?
Yeah. Well, the funny thing was initially, you know, I wanted to protect him from it. I didn't take him up to Sundance and parade him around. The mm-hmm. film was enough. He didn't consciously say, yeah, I want to star in a film that's going to go to Sundance right. and then come out, Dad. So I didn't want him to start getting praise for his performance and being a really good actor at 2 years old and then him seeking that praise and wanting to become an actor because it was kind of put on him. So I knew that if he were to have some too much awareness surrounding what it means and his impact on people through what he did in the film at too early, it would be detrimental. So I really kept it from him, but we would go out to the store and people would just like go right up to him. You were amazing. And Isaac would just like look at me like, what's going on?
I mean, how does it feel to know that you've worked with the best actor you will ever work with the rest of your life? There's no better actor.
I tell him that all the time. He knows it. Now he like messes around with me, you know. He's like, I can't wait to see the end of Love.
That movie I starred in. It's going to be on his college application. Mm-hmm. Can we talk a little bit about your own childhood?
Because
you touched on that mm-hmm. for a moment with the scene in the film. There's like 2 weeks notice mm-hmm. for them to leave where they're living. So with your own mother, she was the Green Party nominee for vice president in 2012 mm-hmm. for the presidential election, which is
crazy.
Like wild.
I know. It's so
amazing.
Bizarre.
So our listeners are like, wait, what? You guys were like living on the streets and then she's vice presidential nominee. So can you talk to us a little bit about your mother and your relationship with her?
Yeah. Wow. There's so much there. What's the kind of distilled version of it all is my mom had me when she was 16. So she was still a kid herself. She left an abusive situation at home and met my father in a halfway house who was a heroin junkie, got pregnant with me, 16. And then my first year of my life, we lived in her car. And then basically just a whole childhood of poverty and homeless at various periods throughout my childhood. But the most distinct period was from when I was 10 till almost 12. And that was, you know, straight up living on the streets with my mom, who then became an activist.
Yeah, how at did that she time. Become an advocate from living on the streets? Like, how did she?
Out of just necessity, okay. Initially, it was having really no other choice. And something snapped in her where she was doing everything by the book. You know, she had a job and we had a place and she was working her ass off and it still wasn't enough. And so when she realized that a lot of other women and children were in the same situation and weren't lazy or on drugs or cheating the system, she started to get really angry about it and felt she needed to do something about it. And so she started organizing other poor women and children who were in the same situation as ourselves. And then that just became her life. You know, she's just led a life of service since that point. And just, it's her calling, you know, it's her passion is to take care of other people, really, and want people to be okay. So that's the way I was raised. I mean, there was a lot of really difficult, hard situations that I was in that I don't want any kid to have to experience. And I get really sad about the fact that there are kids who are going through what I went through and in far worse situations. But I'm glad that I had that experience in my life, especially, you know, now being in a world that seems so far away from that. It's a great way to stay, I think, connected to things that matter most in the world. And the main reason why was by having just an incredible mom. You know, I don't know, now being a parent with two little guys, like, I don't know how someone has a baby when they're 16 years old and sleeping in a car. I'm like, that just blows my mind. And that I turned out like, okay, you know, it's funny, like that experience in my life as a parent now, it puts a whole weird spin on just being a quote unquote, like, conscious parent, you know. It's really, I don't know, just to riff on that for a second.
What does that mean to you?
It's just really interesting. It's like, I'm in this constant kind of pull of knowing that, like, I didn't eat organic food and I was vaccinated, you know, and I was pumped full of junk and raised on a TV and sat in front of a video game system. And I'm a good man now, you know, but and my children, like, eat organic, and I'm a little freaked out by, like, getting all the vaccines at once, you know? And it's just this interesting kind of place to be in, navigating through, okay, there were some things about my childhood that definitely really served me. And just about knowing, picking and choosing and applying, like, that to this kind of new perspective that I have, an exposure to things that my younger self or my mother just didn't have.
How did you find storytelling in the environment you were growing up in?
I was just, it was like a pure, like, escapism. I mean, I was surrounded by media, you know.
Your mother became an advocate.
Yeah. Even just when I was younger though, too, you know, like the rare chance that I got to see a movie and like sit and watch TV, things like that. Like, I just fell in love with storytelling as a way to escape the pain and feeling. Mm-hmm. It was a coping mechanism when I was younger, you know, and the idea of, once I figured out that these were actors playing the superheroes that I was obsessed with, I was like, that's what I want to do. And they're rich.
You know, like, it seems like a no-brainer.
They live in fancy houses. Like, I'm going to do that. And then on a certain level, I think I was encouraged and like touted for a natural ability because I was just having to hustle to get by. I was lying to people. I was protecting myself and lying to people around me that I wasn't homeless, like my friends, because of a deep-seated shame. And I became a good actor from lying.
From real life.
Imagine also like that would help with producing and everything else. Like you've got to be able to convince people of things to like jump on board. How did you as a filmmaker have sort of the confidence and energy to say, I'm going to do this? Mm-hmm. Because everyone out there, like if you have an idea, it's like it's such a... God, there's such a huge difference between being like, I've got this great idea, mm-hmm. and then actually making it happen. And the amount of work involved in doing what you've done and getting other people convinced before there's even a thing.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that. I mean, watching your mom or being present to your mom's journey. I mean, it seems like getting, you know, a movie made is small potatoes when you've watched someone go from homelessness to being an advocate and really pulling. I mean, you have to literally
to
pull
a vice
yourself
presidential nominee
up by your own bootstraps to do that. So, I mean, it sounds like it's really within you innately.
It definitely started there. I mean, my mom was teaching me the secret before the secret was like a thing, you
what
know?
What would she say to you?
She was like, she would encourage me to dream and to love myself. She had me doing affirmations when I was, you know, 4 or 5 years old. I'd have to sit in front of a mirror and say, I love myself, I love myself. So it started there for sure. And then it was also like I, you know, having a mom who was like, yeah, you don't need a fallback plan. You know, when I was in high school and stuff, my mom was like, yeah, you know what you want to do. This has been your dream. Like, it'll happen. Like, just make it happen. Whereas I knew some kids around me had parents who were like, you need that, an actor, that's not really going to work out for you. And so I had the right amount of encouragement. And then also just, like, came up during a time period and around a group of people where, like, that's just what it was. Like, you did what you said you were going to do. Like, you just, around guys who were just, like, proving themselves and integrity was, like, important, you know? And I came out of, like, a crew of little guys. We were all listening to, you know, hip-hop at a time period where it was, like, being, like, a poser was a bad thing or, like, a biter, you know, or not being original or not being unique or true to yourself was like a corny, cheesy thing to do. You know, that's what we called it then. And so I also benefited from that. It was like, oh, okay, I'm going to be me and I'm going to do what I want to do and I'm going to make that work because I'm good enough and I have something to contribute. So I think that helped when I first came into the acting world, and also just like sheer ignorance too. Like, I didn't sit and take in the amount of numbers of people trying to do exactly what I was trying to do. And I just never thought that I wouldn't do it as well.
Yeah. There's a scene in the film where you go to an audition and the audition doesn't go well. Mm-hmm. But I'm sitting there watching the movie and I'm like, because he has to bring his son to the audition, which is like a nightmare. I've talked about that with commercial auditions, but never when it was like a big one. And I was watching it and I was thinking, this is an audition that's not going well, but his audition is so good. Like, it's like, really? I was like, your character is a very good actor. And I mean, so that's part of it too. I mean, you just have... I don't know. Everyone needs to watch this film.
Thank you.
I'm very excited about it.
Do you feel like, and this is kind of a spazzy question, but do you feel like, is there any part of you that worries because you talked about your boys and how amazing they have it and they eat all these organic foods? Mm-hmm. Do you worry sometimes that because everything is so great and supportive and you had this charge to kind of move forward and make something of yourself, that do you worry about that not being there for them?
I don't. Here's why. Because I'm not that I'm not checked out. Yeah. You know, I would be worried about it if I felt myself checking out.
You're not, I mean, we ran into you at Target once.
Oh, totally.
With the kids and Teresa. And I was like, this is like the one time I've gotten Adam to Target. So it was like this little like family powwow over by the Starbucks or the pizza area. But like, you are there with them all the time.
Oh, totally. I am so, my mom still lives in the hood. She lives in one of the worst neighborhoods in the world, you know, and she's never going to leave. Even if I wanted to check out and say, all right, you know, I'm ready to just live in my nice house and worry, stay in my little bubble and just worry about my family, I wouldn't be allowed to.
Yeah.
And
do you let the kids visit her there?
Yeah. And I also, Bodhi hasn't been to Philly yet. Isaac has. But I just, yeah, so no, I'm not worried about it. But I'm conscious of it, and I'm very aware of reminding Isaac, Bodhi not yet, because he gets to just be smothered with little love cuddles. But Isaac, like the rest of, you know, a lot of people don't have, most people don't have pools, you know, like starting just there. And just, and not in a way to make him feel guilty. It's not about shaming him or making him feel like some type of guilt for living this life. It's just like the whole world doesn't look like Beachwood Canyon.
Yeah.
And just about being compassionate and loving and kind. It starts there. If you're, and they, and I see it with them, you know, I see it with Isaac and I see it with Bodhi. There's just a gentle, loving kindness about them. And that's a great start.
Well, and you guys travel so much. I mean, I do think that the best lessons and education you can ever give to your kids is to see the world. I mean, it's shocking to me. And I understand that some people just don't have the means or the ability to do it. But the most I feel like I ever picked up about what is around me is when my family traveled.
Yeah.
And how do you guys do that? How is that work with family and traveling so much? And you guys seem to stick together.
I know,
and
you guys are shooting films all over the world. And when Teresa was on, she mentioned that Bodhi's passport had like 11 stamps or something on it.
13 now. 13 countries.
13 countries. And he's under two.
I know. It's totally absurd. How do we do it? We got a little system. I mean, we're definitely really lucky, you know. Teresa and I think the reason why we work so well together is that we have very real, straight up conversations about the field that we're in and all the weirdness surrounding it. We're really interested in ego and how that affects ourselves and our relationship. And so things like, so when that's part of a conversation of like, okay, you've got a job now and okay, I've got a job, how do we make this work? It makes a lot of that easier just on a base level, because there's just a real connection there in terms of, you know, the stuff that really matters, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. So for me, it was easy. Like
communicating.
Yeah, communication really is really great. So I'm like, okay, you got a movie that shoots for 6 months around the world. Like, I'm going to use that as an opportunity to write. Yeah. And so we can keep the family together. And I'm not going to pursue a job that's going to shoot in Atlanta when we're meant to be in Italy, you know, things like that. And we're lucky that we both do the same thing. And we know what it's like to be on sets and what that looks like and what that feels like.
Yeah.
And the amount of time that is required of the other person and the space that that person needs to do the work that they need to do. And
is there anything that you do so that you're able to leave the work at work? Like, I imagine that if you're shooting something where you're super depressed or even editing The End of Love, like, I can't imagine editing that film and not, like, how do you shake it off so that you're able to be present for your children?
Teresa's an expert at that. I'm learning. I'm getting better at that. I have a daily meditation practice now, which really helps me in all aspects of my life. So I'm very grateful for that, because for me, I'm like leaving work. So I'm always working in my brain. I'm, you know, dealing with some pain and suffering and like brooding and thinking and creating and emoting. And it's like pretty cliche sometimes. Teresa can do a scene where, I mean, when we did our film together, The Ever After, she would just lean into me and I really felt like she hated me and it hurt and I would be so sad and she would just be so fine. It was really, it blew me away. I don't know how, I don't know how she does that, but that's her. Like, that's her in life. Like we'll get in a fight and she's like, yeah, we got in a fight. So what? Carrying on. I'm like, but that's, we got in a fight. Like, and
Yeah. She's such a bright light.
She is a bright light. She's a bright light. And there's something about Australians. They're just kind of like, whatever.
It's true.
Yeah.
That's half why they're so attractive. Australians are such beautiful people.
I know.
And they do. They're so relaxed. And they have so much fun. Like, they lean into the fun.
I know. Yeah. It's true.
Well, thank you so much for being on.
Oh, totally.
This was so much fun.
Thank you, guys.
It would be great to get you and Teresa on sometime together.
Oh, yeah.
It'd be awesome to have
Let's tag team it.
A couple sessions.
Of course.
Maybe we'll get the whole crew together.
Yes.
Let's do that.
A round table of sorts.
Well, thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you so much.
It was an honor.
Cool.
We are back.
That was so cool. He's fantastic.
Isn't he wonderful?
Yeah. I mean, I love when we have our dads on, you know, and the dads that we have had on are not our dads, obviously, but the dads around us, the atomic dads. The atomic dads, yes. Yeah. We've had such an interesting collection of them. We haven't had your husband on yet.
I know. He's going to come on very soon.
We'll get him on.
We're going to have him on. It'll be great. But I thought Mark Weber was so generous in sharing his story, his backstory, and about his process. And when you watch this film, you're going to realize, I mean, it's just, oh, he just seems like a big heart. Like, he's just like this big pulsing heart. And you're just like, wow.
But I loved what he said about how present he is. You know, that's such a, I think that's such an anomaly these days, you know, with everything that's going on, to that he feels so confident with his kids because he knows how present he is. And you felt that. It was very grounded when he said that, you know. So, hopefully we can get him back. I mean, I would love to have him and Tez on together. It would be such an awesome thing. So
our mom session today is Teresa Palmer, his wife. She has a thing on YouTube called Tez Talks, and we mentioned it once when we interviewed her, but I think it's definitely worth everyone revisiting on YouTube, called Tez Talks, like TED Talks, but Tez Talks. And she's so honest and vulnerable and gutsy and open about sharing her experiences too. And you're like, wow, this is such a dynamite couple.
Yeah, they really are.
So check out Tez Talks. That's our mom session today.
Awesome. And my mom bomb today comes from Johann Wolfgang von Goethe, one of my favorite. He's the German Shakespeare. He has this quote that is so beautiful, and I've been waiting and holding it kind of for the right show to say it. And I feel like, based on Mark and also Teresa's kind of how they support their children, it seemed perfect. And there are only two lasting bequests we can hope to give our children. One of these is roots, the other wings. I thought that was so pretty. Yeah, that's it for today's show, this week's show. We'll see you guys next week. It's summertime.
It's summertime.
I feel like we're all flying off to fun locales and doing fun things. And Ellie and I have been like pumping out the shows to try and get them all backlogged up, so we make sure we get to you guys every week because it's so important to us. And just remember, trust in your goodness.
Live out your greatness.
Rock on.
Atomic Moms.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger. I've been friends with her for 10 years. one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.
A few days ago, Brooke Tudine posted an inspirational quote on her wall that got 17 likes and 3 comments. Thumbs up, Brooke. Geico also wants to make a comment. In just 15 minutes, you could save hundreds of dollars on your car insurance by switching to Geico. And nothing says inspiration better than saving money. Well, except for those posters that say things like teamwork, excellence, and make it happen. Hashtag keep climbing. Hashtag savings.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.